Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Hello, hello, hello! It's Kevin and Rob!
I wish you could see the sound waves right
it's
now.
It's totally so loud.
It's like off the charts.
I've been known to have a pingy voice.
Pingy?
Pingy, like, yeah! Like right in the...
Oh, like place...
Just like right there in the juicy spot.
In the mask?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you call it?
As they call it, some do.
Mine...
We're recording, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, yeah, we are. Mine is lower.
Yeah, I know. You go to the Goulet place.
It's a deep, resonant voice.
You kind of used straight guy voice just now.
No, my straight guy voice, I worked on it. I think I showed it to you. I'm really proud.
It's kind of scared me a little bit.
It's going to be like, hi, everybody. I'm going to give you a sample of my straight guy voice, not to, you know, whatever orientation you are. That's great. There's no judging
sure.
here.
Yeah.
But my straight guy voice kind of sounds like this. And like you curl up one side of your lip a little bit.
Yeah, you got a little Elvis meets like Goulet, really.
I don't know who those people are. Did they play for the 49ers?
I love the 49ers. Thank you for that.
Yeah. So every time I see Kevin with this voice, I look at him and go,
God.
Hey, didn't I rotate your tires at Pep Boys? Hey, question for you. I picked my girlfriend up from play practice yesterday. I think I saw you there. Are you an actor? That's cool. We went to see Phantom once. It came through town in Lancaster.
Nice.
Because he was in Lancaster.
Yeah. Oh, good. Lancaster. Yeah. He knows how to say Lancaster.
Lancaster.
Yeah. Duh.
Was it the Fulton?
Yeah.
It was cool. I didn't really like it, but whatever. I took her because I cheated on her with her sister.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. But I made it up to her. I took her to Hosses.
Love good Hosses.
I love Hosses.
First of all, Hosses was in Elmira, New York growing up, and we used to definitely go there.
I like a good Hosses.
Oh, yeah. I like a good, like, all-you-can-eat buffet situation.
Yeah, that's what her sister
said. With options.
I took the sister to the buffet, too. I made a mistake because I took her and her sister at the same time to the buffet. And there was like, when there's like nothing happening, a lull in the conversation. And I was like, hey, I f***ed your sister. And she was like, buy me Phantom tickets.
What's your name?
Oh, I never thought of
it. I know, we got to find a name.
Kyle.
That's really good. That's good.
I work at Pep Boys.
Yeah, you do. Rotate those tires, Kyle.
Yeah.
For the stars.
When I was doing your car, this weird music came out. Didn't sound like anything I ever heard before. Something about, like, touch me. It's so easy to leave me. All alone with the memory. I don't know what the fuck it was, man. That's weird. Was that, like, your grandma's car or something? You're just borrowing it?
And welcome to My Favorite Things. This is Kevin David Thomas.
It's Kyle.
Rob has just been doing a one-man performance art piece known as This Is My Straight Boy Voice.
Hey, it
works. Hopefully we'll edit that down to maybe a couple minutes. But knowing my luck, we won't.
I'll just skip that.
And
edit
you guys just got to listen to it all and think, did we sign on to the right podcast today? Question mark.
Let's talk about the Bulls.
Oh, God.
They're basketball, right?
They are basketball.
Okay.
Chicago.
Okay. He's learning.
You're doing good.
Kyle's learning.
I'm proud of you.
He doesn't get a lot of cable in Fulton.
And a lot of sports coming up this time.
So let me ask you.
Yes.
Who are you hoping for the Super Bowl?
Oh, you know what? None of my teams really did anything.
Yeah,
so
I know.
And I would root for the Falcons. I'm going to root for the Eagles.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Philly person. I was born in Allentown, and that's a lot of my family's in that area. So I'm going to go for Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Ooh.
Yeah. I would ask you, but I know that you don't
Wait a minute. Don't you start with me. No. Hold on. I'm pulling out my phone for a second.
I will be out of town for the Super Bowl, as I will be in Paris and Amsterdam February 1st through the 11th.
Yes, we're going to talk about your concert dates in Paris in a second. But just,
yes, I'll be playing Amsterdam.
Just so you're aware, Kevin, just so I could talk to you more about sports, I downloaded an app called The Score.
Oh,
and
Rob!
And it tells me everything that's going on.
I'm so impressed.
So, unfortunately, the Steelers lost yesterday.
Yeah, they did.
42-45, yes. Jacksonville at 45.
Yeah, it was a good game.
And then what a surprise from the Vikings yesterday, coming in at 29-24.
That was
against New Orleans.
Yes.
You see?
Indeed, that was a big deal for the Vikings.
I know that, because they usually screw it up towards the end. And this year, they actually did not screw it up.
Thank you for that.
That's kind of how I feel when I see a Frank Wildhorn show. It's like... bless. Yeah. I know you and Linda Etter, you have a relationship.
You know, I went to see, but I did see her in concert once. It was an outdoor big theater in Atlanta years ago. This is like 15 years ago. And it was like 2003, let's say. It was Linda Etter and Michael Feinstein, two of the probably most talented, like, musical gifts in the world, her voice, his piano playing. But two of the most boring people ever on stage. And this is no offense to them. I love Michael Feinstein. He's a theater historian. But in a big outdoor amphitheater, they have as much personality as a bag of sand. I mean, it was like, she can sing, but she's not exactly like the most effusive, warmest soul.
Where was this? What arena?
Some theater in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area in Buckhead, I think. And it was like a big, you know, like how the summer will have like, come see so-and-so. So in the Pops or whatever, and it was like the sort of the B list, and it was like Feinstein and Linda Etter, and of course she's saying like I am my Don Quixote, and you know, in college that was when she was getting that pop sound, singing songs that she should never be singing, but she can sing them, so why not? And it was, I just remember being like, this is so boring.
It doesn't really work in an outdoor amphitheater. Did I ever tell you that I used to work for a rec and park, and we used to do
you mean Parks and Rec?
Oh, yeah, Park and Rec.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking of the TV show.
So I was more of the rec side, so that's why I put it first. And we used to do these summer outdoor concerts, sort of similar.
Yeah, they're usually city-run. There's one in Cleveland that I used to be a part of. And
I won't tell you. She was such a C-lister. I won't tell you who she was, but she was... I won't tell you who she was. And
Joyce
everyone,
DeWitt?
No.
Okay.
No, I said C-list, not A-list in my heart. Everyone used to worship her. She used to come... And they used to put her in this shitty little tractor trailer behind the outdoor shell.
Shut up.
And when I started working there, they're like, well, because you know about musicals, your job is just supposed to like stay with her. And so
her handler.
I was her
will.
Handler. It was like my life with Marilyn, yes. Just with my life with insert name here. And I took her backstage to her tractor trailer. And I said, can I get you anything? And she was like, beer? You got beer? And I was like, uh-huh. And so we had to get her some beer and stuff, and I brought her two, and she goes, aren't you going to have one? And I said, oh, I'm 15. She goes...
Sounds a lot like your straight guy. Sorry.
She goes... I said, I'm 15. She goes, you think I'm a cop?
Wait, that was her retort? Yeah. It was like, you think I'm trying to get pulling over on you?
You think I'm a
like,
cop?
No, I'm just 15, and you're 27, and I don't know why we're...
Oh, she ain't 27. We had a good time. She got drunk, and then she sang from Phantom, and that was it.
Oh, my God. Collected her $10,000, and off she went.
They got paid so much.
Concerts were all... If you're ever like, where was that star from the late 90s? Where are they now? Doing concert work. They have to work 3 days a month and make like $20,000.
And I don't want to generalize, but tell me if this is wrong or not. The orchestras that I was working with in these small towns had the biggest egos I ever... I worked with the Philharmonic a few times. They're the nicest, humblest people. Alan Gilbert, one of the sweetest guys you'd ever want to meet in your life. I go to like Thousand Oaks, California.
Well, it's because they have to fight so hard just to be doing what they're doing. Oh. So it's cutthroat. I mean, they literally have to, and they're making like no money. They're teaching private instrument on the side.
There was a conductor. You know,
yet it's the art. So it's like, no.
The guy who was the conductor, the Conejo Valley Pops.
The Pepper Pot players. The Pepper Pot. Of Conejo Valley.
This guy had a writer that was 3 pages long.
I mean, come on.
That, like, nobody could talk to him when he walked from, like, the shell to the backstage area. He had to have, like, this many frescoes. I'm like, I work at the fucking Philharmonic. These people don't have these fucking requests. Excuse my language.
Yeah, I know. Jeez, Rob.
I don't know. I mean, I'll
careful, there's children listening to this.
Careful the things you say.
Probably one of my favorite quotes of any Sondheim lyric ever.
Careful the things you say.
Children will listen. I think it applies in so many different... layers. Yeah. And for a man who like never had children, it's kind of amazing that he could, you know, that he got into the heads of all these characters and really, yeah. Anyway, just a little shout out to Steve.
I heard a really nice story about him that when they were doing Sunday in the Park at the National, I think it was Philip Quast who was playing George, had a child, and Sondheim had come backstage and cradled the baby and was like, this is what it's all about, isn't it? Like looking at the child. So I bet you he would have been a great father had he had the opportunity.
Well, he certainly mentored and so many, infinite number of people.
Yeah.
You know.
So many kids.
Oh, why are we here today, Rob?
In life?
Yeah.
You know, just cause. Just living the dream. Hey, did you see Encore's Off Center announce their new season?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's sort of across the board, isn't
it? Yeah, it's so for our great listeners who know that Encore's does their main season in the winter spring, which
correct.
Is this year it's Me and My Girl and Grand Hotel and Hey, Look Me Over, which is a collection of shows that they wish to do at some point. Yeah. And then this summer they do an off-Broadway series, and this was really unfortunate. As you know, Michael Friedman, who at 41 years old, was the artistic director of Off Center, and he passed. So this summer they're doing one of his shows. They're doing Gone Missing. And they're doing Songs for a New World.
The 17-year-old me would have been really excited about, not realizing what the 37-year-old me realizes why they probably shouldn't be doing that show, but that's great.
Jenny's afraid of water. She's doing so well, but still.
But still.
She's afraid of water. So she won't go near the sea.
Do you know that? I
was going to say, you know the best production that I ever saw?
No.
Was in a college. It was at Penn State. It was a grad directing project. It was directed by a guy named Casey R.T. Graham. Mm-hmm. It was the most brilliant direction of that show I've ever seen in my life. Everyone sat like in the round, and all the lights were turned off, and it was done with like lanterns.
Now, that's kind of what it needs.
It was like this very warm, beautiful. It was brilliantly staged.
Otherwise, it just feels like it's a nice college, you know, recital.
Oh, I hate that.
Do you know what I mean? I think it's having done it a couple of years ago, I realized, wow, this is one of those shows that it's very easy. I love listening to it. And yeah, I'm always going to love the songs. Audiences walked out of that theater being like, what in the world did you just make us do? Like, what was
really?
It? Is it 12 different musicals?
Oh, really?
Because really think about it.
It makes me cry.
He wrote the ending, you know, after it was all done to try to pull it all together. But it really isn't. They're all just standalone songs.
Oh, I cry so much, though. I forgive it. Aww. I don't care. I love it. I love it. I love it.
That's sweet.
I'll give you stars in the moon. Never mind. That's all. Anyway, did you see that? I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. Somebody took a meme of Sarah Huckabee Sanders giving a press conference with a confused look on her face, and it said, "And then I realized I'll never have the moon." That was just like,
I love a good political musical theater joke.
Moon. Yeah,
yes,
just
totally.
Like put on there.
What's the third? By the way, what's the third piece?
I'm actually very excited about it. It's "Don't Bother Me, I Can't Cope."
Ah, yes,
Mickey Grant. So it's
nice.
It's one of those African American musicals from the late 70s that there's a whole bunch that just don't get revived anymore.
Nope.
We were talking about this before we got on the air. Like that ain't supposed to die a natural death.
Right.
Very long. Long titles.
No, you're right.
But we don't see them anymore.
Yeah.
We really don't. So hopefully.
There a lot of them were poetic pieces with, and this is straight out of the civil rights era. You know what I mean? This is like, it makes sense that the art would be imitating life, you know, 10 years later.
Yeah. And so just, I would love to see more of that.
Yeah.
I would just love to see more of these shows, either in an encore setting or a Mufti setting, just to bring them back because we should be experiencing them. So,
yeah, agreed.
All right. So, let's see. Fingers crossed on
This is a good transition because my favorite thing today is a show which very easily could be in this off center.
Oh, what is it?
It could be a part of this season.
Is it an off Broadway show?
It was. It was. It's from the 60s.
Okay.
And then it was revived about 12 years ago. And I fell in love with it when it was revived. And a cast recording was made of this revival of it. And then it ran for a good amount of time. And then it closed the theater. I think it closed the theater that it ran in, or it was very soon to close.
Oh, I know what this is.
What is it, Rob?
This is your lovely Jacques Brel is alive and well and living in
Paris. I really enjoy the music of Jacques Brel.
Tell us, Kev.
This is Jacques Brel is alive and well and living in Paris. The musical from 1968, I want to say. It's a musical review of about 25 songs written by the Belgian-French writer and chanteuse and, you know, director, actor. He did everything. A man named Jacques Brel, who lived in 1920 years. He was very much, he influenced so much of the singers of that, of his time period. 1929 to 1978 is when he lived his life. He retired early on. He influenced so many different artists, and this is when recorded song was becoming very prominent in like the 50s and 60s, and you have all these great recording stars, and a lot of them went other places to find the exotic art, you know, like Jobim is like the girl from Ipanema. They, no one had heard that bossa nova sound, you know, until you know, Frank Sinatra recorded with him in the 60s. Well, Jacques Brel was the French equivalent of this sort of smoky, I almost want to put on a French accent when I talk about him, because it is so like you can almost smell the cigarette smoke, and there's like a poetic darkness and color to his songs that are definitely theatrical songs, but are art songs as well in a very pop vein. Mm. There, that was my way of describing his music. But some actors came together and put his songs into a musical review, Eric Blau and Mort Sherman, who translated them into English and gave us the versions that we know today. And I have just really, really enjoyed the simplicity of his songs and yet the poignancy of them. David Bowie says that the cast album of Jacques Brel is one of his top 10 favorite albums of all time. David Bowie is a major, he was a major protege of his and loved the influence that Jacques Brel had. And he's a favorite of many, many recording artists. So yes, and then there was in 2006 at the Zipper Theater, there was this redux of it, and they rearranged the order of the songs. They kept most of the translations, but they reorchestrated a lot of it. And so songs like Jackie, that had a specific way of it being done, Bob Cuccioli did a whole other version of the song that just was contemporary sounding and yet still a definite throwback to like this 60s, you know, sound.
You can sing to me all day.
Oh my God, it's so good. Some other titles, The Heartbreaking Fennette is one of my favorite songs. If We Only Have Love is the closer. And that's, I mean, it is just, it shows this man was a funny writer and yet poignant writer and yet very much about the plight of the human existence. Oh. Sometimes existential kind of way. But I think there is a reason why we still talk about him and that his music is still important and international and transcended any borders or anything like that. And it just talks about the human condition. And I just think in a very whimsical Amelie, kind of, not the musical, but the movie, but like that sort of French feeling, I think the minute you put on a Jacques Brel song, you feel like you're in that Parisian cafe and you're, you know, have a cigarette in your hand and there's someone, an artist painting a picture behind you.
Will you be listening to it on the plane ride to Paris?
How cliche is that? Meanwhile, one of the travel videos that we watched, it was like, if you go into a cafe and they're playing a accordion music, walk out. It's not real. But if they're going in and they're playing the top 20s hits, then you know it's a real cafe.
Oh, really?
Basically, they're like, yeah, of course you're going to hear like, doo-doo, like all like any Edith Piaf. They're like, yeah, they play that to make it like this is the Paris you envision. But if they're playing Jacques Brel, I will sit down and listen.
And cry.
Sure, and sing a single tear.
I love you, but I hope you never come back. I hope you become a mime.
Can you imagine? I'm just like on the street.
Is that Kevin?
Playing an artist loft. I'm in some the background of some Rick Steves video.
I just see Kevin, pourquoi?
You know, but so yeah, I just think Jacques Brel, young people, I think should listen to this music because I do think it's important to understand where a lot of the influences and songs got to based on international, you know, writers. And you find some really good stuff in there. Mm. It's kind of like Kurt Vile meets, I don't know. I'm just trying to find a metaphor, but actually there's none. It's just Jacques Brel. Go listen to him. It's fun stuff.
Now, which cast recording should I listen to, though?
I would say both. I would say you should listen to the original because you want to hear the spirit of these original songs. But once you hear that original 1968, go to the 2006. I'm so impressed by the performances and the music arrangements of these songs.
Okay.
They reinvented them in a whole new way.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I don't think I've ever listened to the new one. I feel like I listened to the old one at some point.
Check out the new one. It's good. It's really good. It's great singing.
And I know some people use it as audition songs,
oh,
too.
Oh, you definitely can use it. Someone we were just talking to said they use Jackie. I mean, for an
audition. Oh, yeah. Somebody who told us that? Somebody told us that. Chip Sign?
Maybe Chip Sign? Sure.
Chip,
I think. It all runs together.
We do marathon days. We love our marathon
days. We do, guys.
Days.
We'll record like four interviews, and then I'm like, wait, well, who did this? Like, started, what happened here? Like,
we start at 11 a.m., and we end at 7 p.m., mm-hmm. and we get a lot of good people in, and it's very exciting.
We did totally get called out by Jeff Calhoun when we were like, yeah, okay, great. So we're going to get started. This is Hi, welcome. This is Kevin David Tommy. He started laughing at us and he was like, wow, you guys really turned it on.
Well, you know, Jeff, you got to turn on the charm.
It's true.
Why he didn't cast us in Newsies is still beyond us.
Oh, single tier.
Single tier.
Rob, what's your favorite thing?
I would have been a great crutchy. See you today.
Touching that one. Just love that his name's Crutchy.
Hey, Crutchy.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I was torn about our favorite thing today because our wonderful listener, John Moss, sent me a demo of a musical that had never been produced. And I'm so...
There you go, showing off again. Bragging.
Kevin, okay, so we're...
The spoils you get from people.
We're very lucky because so many of you wonderful folks out there send us things that we don't.
Send Rob things.
You could be included too, totally Kevin. Totally you could be included too. John said I have to share with you.
Okay, good. Thank
so
you, John.
So John, who's had this incredible life, was David Merrick's... Worked in David Merrick's office for a
while. Right? Talk about fly on the wall there.
And has had a really incredible career. Anyway, he's one of our really wonderful listeners. And anytime we make a mistake, immediately tweets at us that we screwed something up. That's our... We always know it's a good podcast when we get nothing from John. That's always a good thing from us. But John sent me this demo of a musical that never got produced called Mike. And it's a Johnny Mercer musical. And it was a musical detective story from the 60s, way before City of Angels. And it was based on the Mike Hammer detective series.
Okay.
Anyway, it never got done. The score, I think, is incredible. I was going to share it today. But then I'm like, none of our listeners have access to it.
No, it's just like...
So it's just me talking about something I like that nobody has access to.
That you're so cool that you got, that no one else is cool enough to get. Like, Angel, we could at least get on eBay.
Yeah, it's on the wall, Kevin.
I know, careful.
I framed the poster.
Now
so
it is.
I'm gonna keep looking. This is a security alarm that goes off. Can you not tie your shoes when I'm talking to you?
I'm going to do something that actually involves me.
I'm sorry. Okay, so we're going to skip. We're not going to use Mike.
I'm kidding.
No, we're not going to.
It. Wait, so you just like told us about it for nothing?
Yeah, because there's no follow-up for it. There's no like, oh, I can't wait to listen to it.
Do you have any information about it?
It was a Johnny Mercer show. It never went anywhere. What do you want from
why?
Me?
Why? Why?
John says the book doesn't work.
It's usually true from that era.
But so I was like,
I've been enough musicals in Mufti. No, that's true.
Wait a minute. Why are you breaking? I think you're stepping on the cord.
No, I'm not.
Lift your foot
cord.
Up. Lift your talk in the mic like a normal person.
Hello.
There we go. Now you're not breaking up.
I know it. Okay.
You were crackling. You were crackling for a second. I don't know why. I wanted to make sure that you didn't crackle. Sound like someone was eating Rice Krispies in here.
My shoes were getting loose.
You can take your shoes off when you come into the house.
I know. I'm trying to break them in.
Oh, those are real, but they are nice shoes.
Thank you.
I've already complimented you once on them.
$40
before.
Amazon. Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. We'll get back. You didn't even compliment my nice, sensible pumps that I have on.
I like your shoes.
Thank
I know
you.
Those
They're
blue suede shoes. I know.
How Prince. Your
sexy socks on. Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. You got me some nice socks. I haven't worn them
yet. Well, I know. Well, because it comes up sometimes because we're talking. I'm sitting across from him. And I'm always like, Rob always has such nice socks. Am I crackling again?
No.
And so for Christmas / Hanukkah, I got him a pair of sassy socks.
Maybe you can take the Angel Cast recording on your way out.
Don't tease me like that.
With a bow and say,
wait, so what's your favorite thing going to be?
Okay, so you know how Prince recently published his autobiography?
Oh, yeah.
A Sense of Occasion, I believe is what it's called.
Uh-huh.
Let me just make sure I got that right. Hal Prince, A Sense of Occasion.
Just Sense of Occasion.
Sense of Occasion, not A Sense of Occasion. What people forget, though, is that this is Hal Prince's second autobiography. He wrote another autobiography. It's called, I'm holding it up for Kevin like I'm promoting it. It's called Hal Prince, Contradictions, Notes on 26 Years in the Theater.
Well, he pitched that title to somebody.
And somebody was like.
Someone's like, yeah.
Okay.
That's not too wordy at all.
It's the 70s. Well, Pat Birch's original title was called Book.
Oh, and yeah.
You want to get
question mark?
You want to get any more specific there, Pat?
How? No. Just how.
So he called it Hal Prince, Contradictions, Notes on 26 Years in the Theater.
It doesn't look like it's in print anymore.
No, it's out of print, but you can buy it on Amazon for actually a really affordable price.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Are you ready for this, Kev?
Yes.
It was published in 1974.
Oh, my gosh.
There is no...
No Evita.
There's no Sweeney.
On the 20th century, like all of that
no
stuff.
No Parade, no Showboat. One of the cool things about reading the book is him, everything is fresh. Company, which is a revolution, is fresh. Cabaret, which was a revolution in musical theater staging, is only 8 years old when he publishes the book. So this book is the observations and anecdotes of somebody who is in the middle of a revolution, not realizing the impact that he has.
Right, and was there for the Golden Age part two, you know, like Damn Yankees, Pajama Game.
Well, most of this book, I don't know if you can tell the way I'm flipping it, but most of this book is his beginnings, working with George Abbott, learning how to produce, et cetera, et cetera. So
stage managers, and
stage managing, right? So the book is called, once again, it's called Hal Prince, Contradictions, Notes on 26 Years in the Theater.
I had no idea.
You're absolutely right. It is out of print. It is out of print, but it is available on Amazon. Just but like, one of my favorite parts of the book that I wanted to share with you, if I may,
please,
is his last chapter. Hold on. I don't want to ruin it here. Because it's old. You can tell
I'm dying in this choreography that you're doing right now with the book and the microphone and like trying to get. Oh, careful, Rob! Do you want some help?
Hold on.
Oh my god, Rob is now trying to fold the book out. And he's trying to hold it with one hand while laughing. And here we go.
That's some Jerry Zaks business there for you.
That's right. And raise up on the note at the end.
And he says the following afterthoughts don't belong in any particular chapter. Still, they seem worth recording. And what I think, which is so interesting about those, is that we're going to discuss a couple of these to see which of them still hold up today. Okay.
Okay.
He says, the newspaper fellows who spend their lives extolling the freedom of nonprofit theater have no idea how much more freedom there can be in the commercial theater. All the politicking, campaigning in behalf of money. I sometimes wonder where is the marketplace and who are the merchants?
Ooh.
Has that changed today?
It's just gotten more complicated, but...
Yeah.
It's basically...
But it also feels like nowadays the commercial theater has to really stay within... Mm-hmm. Specific financial guidelines and regional theaters, I feel, are more experimental.
Most definitely.
So I think that's actually.
Although lately, I mean, with Dear Evan Hansen and Band's Visit on Broadway, it's definitely they're challenging audiences for sure.
Yeah, but that's what
Come From Away.
Oh yeah. So
just thinking of like shows that like in the last couple years have been really edging away from like the big spectacle.
Yeah, but
even though that still exists.
Yeah,
but they don't, that's not SpongeBob has been on TDF every single
day. Well, that's so funny because here's his next thing about TDF. Ready? I'm encouraged by the programs which speak to enlarging the theater audience.
Smart.
Maybe it takes a real crisis. Anyway, the Theater Development Fund's ticket booth has had tremendous effect on the business. I wish that producers with smash hits would make even a token allotment of seats.
Hey!
It is short-sighted not to have every attraction represented in the Times Square booth.
Hey, Hamilton Lottery.
Hey, Hamilton Lottery. Hey, yeah. Student Rush, Brent.
Oh, yes.
Like, so he's...
The link ticks, all of that stuff.
Right? The theater.
Oh, this is like man with chair right now. I'm just sitting watching Rob read to me.
Come see me direct. Read to the Drowsy Chaperone at the Priscilla Beach Theater.
Hey, it's June.
The theater has become overly reliant on lawyers and agents. I find myself reminding them that with a hit, you make a lot of money. Don't squeeze it dry. Leave something in it for the investors. Ooh, huh. Ready for this? It has taken years, but the unions have finally agreed to permit the filming of theatrical performances to be kept in the Lincoln Center Library. Why should that have taken years?
Amen.
Amen. And thank God it's still going on. The only thing interesting to me in Pauline Kael's review of the Fiddler film is a sentence in which she said she'd never seen the play. How in hell can a person in the business of reviewing ignore the most esteemed works in the allied arts? Is it too much to ask that film critics visit the theater and vice versa? That all critics visit museums and lecture halls and turn on their television sets? Pauline Kael should have seen the play. She had 7.5 years to see it.
Mic drop, Hal.
Oh, it keeps
nice.
Going. I'm going to read a couple more, then we'll move on. The trouble with so many of the creative people on Broadway is that they don't read, they don't travel, they don't inform themselves. They are so talented and undereducated. In the regions, they tend to be more educated than talented.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if I agree with that one.
I don't think you can make a creative person out of someone who isn't one. But I think you can encourage someone who has it buried so deeply inside that he might not get to it.
Aw, or she.
Ah, that's what I was going to say. And then, our last thing, and then we'll move on. About 2 years ago, John Weidman, a law student at Yale, brought me the outline for a play about Commodore Perry's visit to Japan.
What?
It was realistic in the style of the Kane Mutiny Court-Martial. Not the sort of theater I care for. I suggested instead that he tell the story as though it was written by a Japanese playwright in the kabuki style, with the Americans, the traditional kabuki villains. He has done that and called it Pacific Overtures. It will be a musical. Steve Sondheim is writing the score. Pat Birch will choreograph, Boris is designing the scenery, and Florence clots the costumes. It comes next. Closed book.
Wow.
So, once again...
That is a really fascinating little piece. It looks like essays, almost, is what
Yeah, I mean, that's just the last chapter, but everything else prior to that is a very linear story of then this happened, that happened, this is how I felt about it. His new book, Sense of Occasion, now... It's a lot of this, not the same anecdotes, but now with time being passed, able to observe and comment on what really was a revolution and what wasn't. But at this time, the guy's just trying to put on a good show.
No, he was at the peak of his career.
Yeah.
You know, he had more to come, but he was definitely like at the apex.
I mean, So I think before you read his new book, Sense of Occasion, which I'm sure once we are finished with it, it'll be a favorite thing at some point.
Yes.
I ask everyone to go on to Amazon if you can. Hal Prince, Contradictions, Notes on 26 Years in the Theater.
Yes.
And you?
Jacques Brel is alive and well and living in Paris. Give it a listen.
But no, Mike, the Johnny Mercer musical.
I mean, it would be great if we could hear it, Rob.
Well, you know, I can't send it out to all of our listeners.
I know.
But maybe if you call me, I'll sing a couple of my favorite songs for you. I think the score is really great.
No, I would love to hear it.
We could have 54 below. Just
right? Just push it slide in. It in.
Just
I'm sure the Mercer Foundation would like to have their Johnny's music heard.
I think so, too.
Again.
Maybe a night of unsung Mercer.
Don't they do that big competition in South Carolina?
Do they really? I don't know.
Yeah, there's like a Mercer. Yeah, like, you know how like there's like the Kurt Weill thing?
Yeah, I was going to say,
there's a Johnny Mercer thing. I got to know more about it before I speak.
Are you
like
going to sing? Are you going to sing a Johnny Mercer
song? I'm too old for that. Are you kidding me? But I do want to, I need more Johnny Mercer in my life, though.
Oh, really?
I feel like I need more to understand his music more.
I'll share the demo with you.
Okay.
But you, and only you.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry. Till next time.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. These are
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.